Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. Yes, you, fearsome and generous, honest and humble in search of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet for an hour to experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other through our joy and lessons learned. We share topics that tradition tells us there are some things that you just don't talk about, but not here. Here we live beyond the judgment and beyond the wreckage. Each week we start right where we are. We ask only that you come to the table dressed in your inner awesome, accessorized with your authenticity and your vulnerability. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device, and we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, should you miss us, you can catch our podcasts wherever you listen. Check out Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. And those of you who love to talk to Tyra offline, keep those comments coming at tyra@tyragarlington.com. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our theme song, and especially for naming it, I'm Listening. Our first 2 years of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G has become a human library of stories of our guests. Not only do they have stories, but they are stories being written every single day. It's how our stories come together that sets us apart. That's why I ask each of my guests to introduce themselves, so immediately you hear the music of their language and feel their energy. Introducing themselves this way becomes a conversational GPS about our time together. Before we meet today's guest, I want to create our common thought space that will support our theme, Voices from the Future. This month, we visit the land of Gen Z, also known as iGen, also known as Centennials, also known as Nexters. They're the generation that follows the millennial generation. Generation Z is the youngest and most ethnically diverse, largest generation in American history, comprising 27% of the U.S. population, and they're growing. But listen to this, Gen Z is described as a maker generation, a far more pragmatic and practical generation who must architect and build the future we're all trying to imagine living in. Now, the world doesn't need any more foundational layers. It needs a generation to create. There, I believe, is the best way to predict the future, by building it. And Gen Z can be described as builders, as human justice warriors. They're living out loud. Their gifts are bridges. And remember, bridges go two ways. So our gifts become our tickets across the bridge into one another's lives. Howard Thurman says, "Don't ask the world what it needs. Ask what makes you come alive. And then go do it." I want to end our common thought space offering with a message from a famous millennial, DJ Khaled, music industry mega producer and recording artist, who reminds Gen Z as well as all of us in his book, The Keys, and I quote, "We the best" means exactly what it says. I didn't say I'm the best. There's an important distinction. I said we. That means me, Fan Love, my team, and everybody who's got love and a positive energy. Let me ask you this. If someone came up to you and asked, "Are you the best writer, chef, producer, director?" what would you say? If you don't declare that you're the best, I'm disappointed. You're supposed to say that you're the best, because let me tell you, you are the best. You need to own it with confidence and conviction. Say it to yourself first 1,000 times, then say it to others 1,000 times more. For real, is somebody better than you? Nah, we the best. You have to speak your success into existence, because absolutely no one else will do it for you. That's why I started my first label, and I called it We the Best. Were we the best yet? That's up for debate. But did we have the drive and the passion and the necessary dedication to be the best? Without a doubt. You know, Muhammad Ali, rest in peace, said, "I'm the greatest." I said that before I knew I was. DJ said, "Make your life about fulfilling your vision and dream big," end quote. Jimmy Grimes, my guest today, is a delight. And yes, a Gen Z, or Nexter, or Centennial, all those other things. Jimmy's in the studio this evening with his mother, Sherry. And now Jimmy's going to join the human library as his book persona, which I have come to know as energy and hope. See what you think. Jimmy, I want you to make us want to read more of you and your book.
Well, hi. Hi. Hi, Tyra, and hi, anyone that's listening, if anyone's listening.
I certainly hope so.
Me too. Well, I'm Jimmy. I just graduated high school, and I think that might be the least interesting thing about me. I hope it is, anyway. I'm going to try to be a physics major in college, and I hope that that leads me to being a doctorate in astrophysics, and I hope that that leads to me working for NASA, and I hope that leads to me living on the moon.
And you know what? You can do that. Yeah, you're the right age.
At this point, I think I am.
Sorry, I put a comma in there. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, with what I was just talking about there, I'm just going to jump into what I think could be the most exciting thing that's happening right now, at least to me, because what I want to do ultimately is help humanity, I guess, stay interested in, it's hard to explain, and I'm just trying to jump into it with both legs.
You know, one of the things that I learned when I was doing research in your generation, mm-hmm. they say you are the champions of social justice, and that you look at this world a little differently, in that you're more accepting of things that seem to be in the margins. And when we were talking yesterday, I kind of got the feeling that your spirit is one that's inclusive. Is that right?
I think so. And I think the best example of that is actually what I was telling you right before we started here. One of the places that I like to say that I come from, or one of the first families outside of my own, was what I found in my high school theater department. And you can find just about any kind of person you can imagine in there. Mm-hmm. You know, you can find someone that's, you know, a full IB student, straight-laced, trying to get all straight A's, you know, and be at the top of their classes. You'll find someone who has no idea what they're going to do outside of high school. You can find comedians. You can find deathly serious people. But they all, in that place, they all came together to create, you know, and to produce something for other people to see. And that was the first place that I realized how accepting other people really can be. So I definitely think that things are more inclusive than they've ever been.
Were you participating in a theater production this spring?
Yeah, I was actually this past spring. I was just in our high school's production of Mary Poppins, which, oh boy, that's a whole bunch of different stories. By the end of it, I think it was all of our favorite show experience. And, oh man, I'm supposed to be
talking.
What did
you do? What did you do?
Well, my personal role in it was pretty small. I just played a background character, and I was throughout, you know, in the ensemble. So I guess on stage, I had a pretty small part, which is what a lot of people would probably say. But backstage, I really think I don't want to be self-aggrandizing or anything.
It's okay. Go ahead. Just do it. Now, what I want you to build on is what you said. A small part, when we're thinking theater's mm-hmm. team. There's mm-hmm. no I in theater, and there's no I in team. And the one thing I learned when I was taking screenwriting, mm-hmm. when you write for creative production, you cannot do it without producers, musicians, actors, all of that. So to me, that builds on when you said, you know, inclusion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The amount of people that you don't know are, you know, the people that spend the most time working on our shows are the people backstage, the people
yes.
that build the sets and make the costumes
right.
and spend multiple hours every single day programming a lighting board, which I feel like should be its own class
yes.
in our high school.
Yes, yes.
And those people that really sometimes it seems like they put a whole lot more into it than some of the people that are on stage, but I'm not going to name any names. But they pour themselves into that work, and the amount of pride that I see them take, even if, you know, they don't get any other recognition than just them being able to sit in the audience and watch what they've created. Because
mm-hmm.
This is something that I talked about with our old director is that, and a bunch of my peers, it was when I was kind of, because I've mainly been an actor. I've been on stage. And I've told a lot of the other actors, you know, we sometimes can be allowed to do a little bit less than our absolute best, you know, as the actors on stage. And it has to be a very internal drive to be doing our best. But those guys, you know, the tech, without them, the world doesn't exist. You know, if our set designer, you know, doesn't build exactly what he has to and exactly what is going to make this real, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, if let alone if he doesn't build it structurally sound and someone falls off of it, there is no show without them. You know, there can be a show with, you know, an actor that's trying 50%, but if the people backstage aren't pouring themselves into it, then there's not going to be a show to put on.
So with that knowledge, does that encourage you to be your best, knowing that the people that are lifting you up that are invisible to the people sitting in the seats have done their best? Do you feel like you all march to that excellence?
That's been a huge part, I think, for every single performer. And our director, you know, we were lucky enough that she came from the technical world in D.C., and she was a lighting designer, so she knew more than anyone else how important their job was.
Right.
She would make sure that we remembered, these are the guys that are allowing you guys to do what you love. Without
Absolutely.
Them, you wouldn't even get the chance. So seeing them, you know, and some, you know, some of them would go on to win awards for the things that they did, would, I think, inspired everybody, freshman to senior, to make what they did just as worth it, you know.
And I'm going to segue because you said something. For the audience, this is personal.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love intergenerational guests because it gives me a sense of eternity. I can look forward and I can look at someone like Jimmy and say, okay, I could have him adjust my IV, you know, when I'm in the nursing home. He could make me laugh. And so I claim these younger people. So I had an opportunity to laugh yesterday at lunch with Jimmy and his mother, Sherry. And we talked about theater, but there was something that he seemed to get really excited about, and I had no idea that it was popular, which is board games. And tell me what draws you to it, you and your buds.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you all to it? And we're not talking now video games,
oh,
everybody.
No.
We're talking board games, like
yeah.
I grew up with, only they're different.
So where my life starts with board games starts at a seemingly almost in a melodramatic way, but it's just where these parts of my life seem to line up. At my grandmother's funeral
okay.
was where board games became a huge part of my life. It sounds like how on earth could those two things
well,
be?
Well, tell us.
So I have a really big extended family.
Okay.
I've got a lot of cousins, especially on my dad's side. That's where the huge mass of people who share my last name come from.
Okay.
And for my grandmother's funeral, people came from California and Texas and here, and some people that may have even been overseas at the time came together.
Uh-huh.
And we really pride ourselves on the cousins, you know, my dad's brothers and sisters, all of their kids, you know, really try to stay in contact. And we, you know, for the funeral, we all found ourselves together again in a way that we hadn't been for a while because, you know, they're adults. They've got jobs and careers and things. And
imagine that.
Yeah. We came together and, you know, it was, and you know, in between some given events and some of my older cousins, they said, hey, we've got some games here. Do you guys want to play with us? And we thought, sure, because we weren't really doing anything anyway. And we played some games called The Resistance and a card game called Flux. If people listening know what those are, they might know how.
You might need to tell.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't, and it's funny how much time I could spend talking about them, but I'll abridge it. The Resistance is basically a game of secret identities, and, you know,
okay.
They're given out at the beginning of the games. Mm-hmm. There's a small group, most of you are on the Resistance, you're on the blue side, and then there'll be just two or three people that are spies, and nobody knows what each other are at the beginning of the game. And the spies find out who each other are in a kind of a secret conversation. And then as the game goes on, different people are chosen to be leaders and to be choosing other people to go on the teams. And what I love about that game and what it's kind of, because that was really at the center of my loving board games, is the absolute center of the Resistance. It's not rolling dice or drawing cards or any of that. Every game piece is just a stand-in for, you know, an extension of your character. The entire game is in discussion and conversation.
Oh, I love it.
And the overarching rule of the Resistance is you can say whatever you want. So you can start, you know, within the first minute of the game, if you're one of those spies, because no matter what, you need to keep yourself from being outed as a spy. But even if the table pretty much agrees that you are, you're not out of the game. There's no going out until the end of the whole round. So you can start building these, you know, logical chains, you know, gaining people's trust and building them up, you know, to, you know, oh, you got to trust me. Just look at the way that this mission played out. You got to know that I wasn't the bad guy here, only at the end to have this huge reveal that you were under their noses the entire time. Or the flip side of that is if you're on the Resistance, you know, you're the guy that starts knowing nothing and you have to do everything you can to see through people that are lying and find out who's telling the truth to be able to build up a group that, you know, a group of people that can be trustworthy and that will vote together, because there's so many, throughout the game, there's so many stages of voting and choosing. The outcome of the entire game is entirely on every single individual. And there's, you can take so many different examples
so
of society.
So what I need to understand now, there's there's an army of cousins.
Oh, yeah.
And you all are bonding.
Mm-hmm.
So you have as a centerpiece a game.
Yes.
That allows for conversation, mm-hmm. collaboration, critical thinking,
absolutely.
Building trust. So
breaking trust.
How many, first of all, okay, breaking trust.
When it comes in.
Okay. So is there a limit to the number of people that can play at once, or is it convenient to play? How does that work?
The range goes from 5 to 10 players.
Okay.
And, you know, with that, I've kind of agreed with some of the people that have been my closest board game friends that actually the 10-player games aren't quite as fun, because sometimes the quieter players kind of, you know, sink into the background and just allow other people to talk for
them.
Can
they build teams?
Well, only as far as you allow yourself to trust other people, you know, and that's where the game comes in.
That's interesting.
Because as you're talking, you know, if you think that you trust someone, you can say, hey, we should both vote along the same lines. You know, asking someone else, hey, do you trust them? Do you think that they'd be a good idea for the team? So you do come to form little alliances, but they're only as strong as what the outcome of the missions are.
Is that parallel to your life in any way?
You can draw a lot of parallels to that game and my life. That's probably one of the first games where I really learned. You kind of learn a lot about other people and yourself playing it, and it's not an exaggeration of the game. You can really. Almost, if you know someone well, you can almost expect how they'll play. And if you don't know someone, you'll know a lot about them by the time the game is over. Because some people, you know, you can find that they can't quite handle, you know, being grilled. Because if everyone at the table thinks they're a spy, they'll be grilling them, saying, I know that you were the spy in this mission. You did this and this and this. And the way that they act under that stress, you know, depending on what kind of person they are, they may allow, even if they're on, you know, even if they're innocent, they may allow the table to say, oh, fine, maybe I am the bad guy. But then you'll find the more strong-willed people that find the way to.
Which one are you?
At this point.
What did you find out about the game? You said I learned stuff about me.
Well, I guess I learned that I'm really good at paying attention to authenticity in the way people talk, because, okay, you know, there's certain amounts of math that you can do in the game of how many failing missions were you on, how many successful missions were you on. But I find I play the game the best just watching other people's faces.
Okay.
And I learned about myself that I can be really good at catching how people are feeling, and almost I can catch people's authenticity, and that kind of allows me to understand them a little bit more. It's sort of a...
So what I'm hearing, translated into old ladies' language, is that you have a power of discernment.
I think so.
You know, you observe at many different levels, and you can... You said some things to me yesterday, having met me for the first time,
mm-hmm.
An observation or two that were right on target. You know, I didn't bother to tell you that. But, you know, I'm thinking that's what you might be saying. And what I'm also hearing that I like about board games, the way you talk about them, better than hiding behind a screen
mm-hmm.
with the game. Because what you said was, I can read the people. How can you read them? I'm looking at them. I'm listening to
Absolutely.
Their voices. I'm watching how they respond with their bodies. To me, that's part of what screens don't allow to happen and makes it difficult to build relationships and intimacies. How do you build a friendship without a screen? I don't know.
Right.
Know? And I'm watching. I like to go out sometimes where I think your generation might be and just watch. I even went into Dave and Buster's and people were playing games with
yeah.
screens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their phones as well. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay. I mean, I'm accepting that's what you need
right.
to do. But at the same time, I've learned a little secret. I'll ask, can I have 5 minutes of your time without a screen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need you to look at me. I need you to see me. I need us to connect. And, of course, again, what? You know, what's that all about?
Right.
But I like what you said in terms of board games. Now, what you talked about on this game,
mm-hmm.
is this pretty much you can find across board games, relationship building and all, or is this just different? This one's unique.
I would say this one is the biggest example of that kind of thing. But really, over time, any, like you say, the number one point of every board game is that it's people sitting around a table. You know, you're
yes.
2-3 feet from every other person.
Yes.
And whether it's a strategy game or a deception game, or, you know, even if it has to do with puzzle solving, or like there's even a game that we play that's pretty much like charades. It's called a concept, and you can put little markers on different images and symbols and try to, you know, convey an idea without saying words. You can learn a lot about people through really any kind of game where you're with them. Because anyone taking an active, first of all, if someone's playing a game, you can already tell they want to do something for enjoyment, that they're going to be in a free place, you know, when they're playing a game, because it's not a job interview or anything. So they're already stepping up to be like, sure, I'll spend some time with you guys. And then depending on what the game is about, if it's, you know, against the clock strategy game, or if it's, you know, an investigative deception game like that, just people starting to take an active part. And where no matter what, at the, you know, whatever the game is, there's going to be some part where you're directly interacting with another person. It kind of, I don't know, that's continued to be what I see is so special about the games that we play. And my kind of, I wouldn't even want to call him second in command, the guy that's at the same level that I am on.
Your
on
wingman.
Games. Yeah, his name's Zeke Buchholz. He's
Well, he'll listen to the show.
I might tell him to listen because I gave board games a mention.
Yeah.
He and I have spent so long talking about board games away from the table when it's just him and I. We'll spend hours talking about how could we get people to get interested in this game? What do people like about this? And he and I, in those conversations, I've realized how much of a kinship we have about people. Because one thing that we always agree on is I never want to, you know, force them to play this game. Or I never want to say, hey, guys, you know, we want everyone to make their own choices when, you know, playing the games and choosing what we're gonna do. So when we're all spending time together, I can almost, you know, if there's a new person at the board game table, I can look across at Zeke and I'll hear him say something where he's kind of almost tailored his phrase to one of the new players to really get the most out of them engaging in the game. Because if there's someone that's maybe sitting back and not fully engaging, he'll find that way to really get it out of them.
So I think we've learned a lot about Jimmy. And I think we've learned a lot about Jimmy in terms of how he plays the game, because I think there is probably a parallel with how he lives his life. And I don't want to, I mean, he just said he graduated from high school. I don't want to let that just slide under the door. I want you to be able to give a shout out to your school. Mm-hmm. And I want you to think about, you're a senior. Mm-hmm. What message would you put in a bottle to those who are going to be seniors next year?
Wow. Well, there's so many things that I would say.
Well, give me one or two.
Right. I guess ultimately what I would tell them is be a part of something. You know, find something to be a part of before you leave Robinson. Because the amount of communities, you know, I put my time, I put my stake in the theater department, and I spend 110% of my time there. But whenever I look over at someone that's on a football team or any given extracurricular or even something that's in their classes that's just, you know, extra time, there are people that are just as dedicated to whatever they do that I am to the theater, that I've seen 2 minutes of them focused on nothing but what they love. And the friends that you make and the experience that you gain, I know that I wouldn't be who I am without the department. So I would say find something to be a part of, because there's too many options not to. In Robinson. There's too many opportunities.
Okay, that's one. Give me another one.
I guess in a way that's connected to that, don't be afraid of the people that are part of something completely different or that you think, you know, come from a place and you're just like, oh, those guys are in the gardening club. What would I have to talk about them? You know, these guys are on the football team. What would we have in common?
So when you're saying with the explanation you just gave, don't be afraid of people who are not like you. Mm-hmm. Is it don't be afraid of them? Are you talking about don't be afraid to approach them? Don't be afraid that you're not, are you thinking you're not enough to fit in? Like, what are you thinking about?
I would say maybe more than don't be afraid, try and be active and try to get to know them.
Try to get to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Because so try to get to know people that are different.
Yes.
Okay.
And different in a lot of different ways. And I think it tends to be the most interesting difference when it's, you know, a difference in the mind of what they, you know, what they spend their time thinking about, you know, what they see as the most important thing in their lives. Because, you know, I was able to be in some cross-cutting different groups because, you know, I was in the theater department, but I also took the personal fitness classes that that my school offered, where we would all go into, like, the football weight room. And there, the only guys I was brushing shoulder with were, like, lacrosse and soccer and football players and baseball players.
So did you have to, you know, I'm going to walk behind your words. You mm-hmm. might as well know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're a very outgoing person. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, like in each one of us, there's some insecurities. But you're a theater guy, so you walk into the weight room. Was there ever a time when you paused as a theater guy? And I'm using your terms mm-hmm. as a theater guy to walk into the weight room, mm-hmm. jock guy. Mm-hmm. You know, now that's two communities coming together. Mm-hmm. And what you told me about some of your peers is they may not take the step you took.
Right.
So I'm hearing you say, hey, next year, seniors, mm-hmm. juniors, sophomores, freshmen, don't hesitate
right.
to try something new. Mm-hmm. And this is my favorite saying, have faith after failure to try again.
Absolutely.
So if it doesn't work, mm-hmm. okay, so now we've got be a part of something, mm-hmm. Try to walk into something different with other mm-hmm. people that are different. Mm-hmm. What else?
Oh, boy. When it comes to your classes, try and find one person in the class that you can connect with. Because one thing that I remember about any given class, if it's worth remembering, is if something, you know, because something stressful is always going to happen. If you're in the classroom, you know, it's, you know. So try and find somebody that you can connect to on a nonverbal level. Because some of my best moments and memories with people is when something ridiculous happens in the classroom, whether we have, you know, an eccentric teacher or it's like the student that always thinks he's hilarious and has to say something. And you find that person in the classroom that you can just look across the room and be like, you just heard that too, right? And just you can have that kind of mental kinship and just be like, okay, I'm not the only one seeing, whether it's, you know, good or bad or just something worth noting. It's great to have someone to just say, Connect. Did you just see that too? And then it's and then there's your segue, you know, something to talk about after class. Like, that's, you know, your point of conversation instead of going on your phone or texting the person that's in your next class or just, just waiting for school to end. In between classes, just take a minute to say, okay, that was ridiculous or that was awesome or that was crazy, right? And then just try and talk to at least that one person. And I guarantee if it really was something worth talking about, if there's someone else that's in your class, you know, just walking behind you that may have never said anything otherwise, they'll be like, okay, you guys saw that too, right? And then in a few minutes, you're all talking about something that, you know, maybe it wasn't even really that crazy, but if it's worth mentioning, you can get, you know, a conversation.
I'm going to build on what you're saying. I'm going to ask you to put a comma there because what's prevalent in our schools today is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And what you just gave us is an anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
What you said, can you find one person to connect with?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find that one person, and I don't know, I have to ask that question, do your peers, when they see one, two or three guys, girls, whatever, mm-hmm. together, they're less likely to come to that space of bullying rather than someone who's marginalized and maybe alone? Because what I heard a lot, one, you don't know the fact that I've taught at all levels, including college.
I didn't know that.
I know. But I also had students that, you know, something go on, and you know the connection.
Yeah.
And sometimes I had a connection mm-hmm. with the students when that occurred.
I was going to say it's not bound to other students.
Absolutely. And yet, at the same time, as a teacher, there were times when I would read trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble.
Yeah.
And nonverbal trouble, necessarily. And sometimes the student brought it with them into the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it happened after they left. But what I'm hearing you say is, I want to give you a question then. You gave me a healthy scenario
mm-hmm.
of connection, friendship, empowering, you know, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite of that, how would you help someone who's coming to school? I don't know what's going on at home,
mm-hmm.
but something that makes it less than a good day for them.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who has a need
mm-hmm.
to prey on and have power over
mm-hmm.
may approach that person who's vulnerable.
Right.
How might you, or how might you and your friends, or how have you seen people resolve that kind of situation? And yeah, it's under the umbrella of bullying.
Mm-hmm. When you say resolving it, you mean seeing something take place, or maybe just knowing someone's been through something?
Making it better.
Well, I'd say one of the first ways to make it better, or what I always try to do if I see someone that's having a bad day, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
But especially if it's been caused by somebody else,
mm-hmm.
if I saw what happened and if I can really be understanding, because something that I always try to do is I never try to assume I know what's wrong with someone.
Okay,
because some
that's
people
good.
Can be a little quick to saying, oh, you know, here's what you got to do, and then they just say, here's your anecdote, and now you're good, and then they kind of leave them alone. You got to... It's more listening than, you know, helping in terms of, like, do this and this and this, and now you won't be in this situation anymore. It's being, you know, present for people, and sometimes you really have to start in a quiet way. You know, you
yes.
can't say, hey, I want to sit you down and talk about our feelings for a second, because a lot of people, even...
Well, now, this person that I'm talking about mm-hmm. is not going to, you know, you're probably not going to have interaction with that person.
Right.
Did you see the movie or read the book 13 Reasons Why?
I know of it.
Okay, well, I bought the book, read the book. This year I decided, as I was going to talk to your generation,
mm-hmm.
I binged watched it two
the
nights.
Netflix series.
Yeah, two days. And mm-hmm. what I loved is the direction is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is go into the minds of all of the significant players, as well as the woman, young lady who's committed suicide.
Right.
And she's narrator and conscious and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And what was obvious in the book and in the movie is that it's not obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what you don't know about people. It's about the mask that we wear
mm-hmm.
and all of that. So when I was asking you, if you observe something that, because you have such great discernment, you said, this is troubling, you know, how might you approach that person that you think might be hurting?
Well, I guess the first thing that I don't really have, you know, an overarching thing that I do, since, you know, everyone's so different. The way someone might need to be approached and
yes.
what might help them the most
yes.
comes from, you know, observing them. So if I've seen, I may not approach someone the first time
mm-hmm.
I've seen that, you know, there's something wrong, only because I don't, not sound like an investigator, but I want to ensure it wouldn't be imposing. You know, I want to be, have been around them a little bit. You know, if we're in a setting where, you know, a classroom or, you know, we're doing things, I won't ask directly, hey, what's wrong? But I'll try and just find ways to talk to them and just really like making a friend with anyone. Just
there you go. That's yeah. what I was hoping. You're going to be a friend.
You got to start by just
being a friend.
And not a friend with the intent to cure or
absolutely.
Anything like that.
Absolutely.
That's when, you know, one of the, a pretty, I see as a poor thing that you can do to someone is turn them into, oh, this is the person I'm helping. Not, this is because, you know,
this is the person I'm liking?
Exactly. Because if it's the person you're helping, once you think you've helped them, then it's like, oh, well, bye. Because, you know, if they're worth helping where they are now, they should be worth staying around when things are good, you know? So they
yeah.
it's just someone that needs to be brought back to, you know, neutral. If they're already, if they're somewhere negative, you just want to be a friend of them and be present and maybe talk about anything other than what may be directly wrong, but just find out.
Or maybe just be quiet.
Exactly, yeah.
Be present. I love what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And adults often want to fill the space. And sometimes quiet allows resolution and revelation. And if you, in fact, I think it's probably more difficult to be quiet with someone and let them know that I'm here than it is to try and fill that space, you know, da 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 da, and they're like, oh, why are you here? You know, I need a hug, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that silence is that hug.
I can make just two very different connections just with that idea. The first thing is, I don't know if you've seen the movie Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
I just
hasn't the world.
I remember there's one scene where it's John Travolta talking to Uma Thurman, and there's, you know, a moment of silence while they're just sitting there, and she says, you know, don't you just love it when you're so comfortable with someone that you can share
yes.
a comfortable silence?
Yes.
And I think that's the perfect example, because
yes.
it shows when two people are really on the same wavelength, you know, that they can just sit in silence and not be worrying about, you know, why are they suddenly quiet? They're just like, oh, they're thinking about what they're going to say next. And then,
or
yeah,
you don't know this person like
right.
that.
Right.
You have the courage to be silent. That's a risk.
Mm, definitely.
That's a big risk, you know, just to go and be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that a lot when I support young women.
Mm-hmm.
I just go, oh, Ms. Tara, why do you keep coming? Because at some point I want to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no need for me to do anything because I'm listening. And you said that earlier, how important it is to listen. That's a gift. That's a gift you give away. And speaking of gifts to give away, I want to bring your mother into the conversation. She gave you as a gift to the world.
Well.
And you have, I think, given her gifts as you have existed on this earth. Sherry, hi.
Hello. Hi, Tyra.
I have to tell you all, Sherry has the most beautiful, welcoming smile.
Uh-huh.
And our friendship is starting.
Mm-hmm.
And we met in a very interesting way and decided, oh, why don't we have coffee? And 3 hours of coffee, you get to know someone fairly well, and especially when it's only one cup.
Mm-hmm.
But hi, Sherry.
Hi, Tyra.
Tell me how you're feeling right now watching your son do this.
I feel how I always feel when I'm watching him do anything, which is very, very proud. Very proud.
Yeah. Tell me, this is where I'm going to bow out, and this is going to be between the two of you. Yes. I'm going to use what we learned from National Public Radio, a StoryCorps format, and it's where the two people who have the relationship speak to one another about things that are important, things that make them laugh, mm-hmm. things that they came through that was hard, those kind of things. So if you hear silence, it's not my fault, it's their fault. So here you are.
All right. Jimmy.
Yes.
I'm just happy to be here with you.
I am also happy to be here.
Have a conversation. The best conversations that I have with you are just spiraling subjects when you find yourself really interested in something that you want to share. And it's just a wealth of information that you have. And your generosity in sharing what's in your mind is one of my favorite things about you.
I owe it to you that I can be so interested in things because you're almost always there to listen, you know? Because something I was telling Troy and some of the other guys that, you know, some you know how a lot of people will preface a story like, I don't know if you'll think this is interesting, you know how a lot of people start like that?
Oh, right.
I've started just saying, I think everything's interesting because you've always given me time to just tell you whatever story took place. And, mm-hmm. you know, even you've let me go on for multiple minutes explaining math.
I know.
Just math, just like physics problems and
because
stuff.
Because your passion is contagious. When you're talking about something that you're really interested in, I am fascinated. Always. Always.
Well.
It is a gift. It is a gift.
And it's just kind of reflected in that way. Since you always let me tell stories about or just describe, break things down like that, mm-hmm. This is the first time I ever kind of realizing that fact, but I think that it's true, that I'm now can tell a story to anybody about any given thing because you've always kind of been a receiving, not to be, but you were my first audience and then I did theater and then it was just so easy. But really just, you know, since you could always be present for me telling a story when even sometimes maybe Jerry would be like, yeah, that's cool, whatever. But like
Jerry's his older brother.
Yeah. But that you could be a really active listener and I'm.
Yeah, that's just, that's what I wrote down listening here when we were talking about that just a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. how important that is just to be present, as you said, and listen and not try to fix anything or come up with a, you know, any kind of answer mm-hmm. to whatever question the person is asking internally or externally
right.
or whatever. But it is easy to be a listener for you because you have such a, your mind, you love learning. That is my favorite thing. I like to say occasionally, this is why I had you, so I can learn things. Because, you know, I wasn't always paying attention when I was in school.
Well.
But it is fascinating to see you absorb the world.
Well, thank you. And
thank you, Jimmy.
And the listening thing, I think I learned that too from you because, you know, we were just talking about things like the resistance and all that kind of stuff. Mm. You really, but when it comes to anything, when you're interacting with people, which is like 90% of just things that we do, you need to be able to listen, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and be able to really pay attention. Like, you know how there's a lot of people that will like sound like they're listening and then they'll lead a conversation to wherever they want it to go.
Right. It's that habit we have as humans of preparing what we're going to say next in response to
right, yeah,
the person
yeah.
who's talking. So you're thinking about that and you're not thinking about what the person's actually saying. Mm-hmm. I have to consciously remind myself to do that sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Ty, when we were talking yesterday, I related that story of when you were a tiny little thing, like 6 months old.
Oh, the, yeah.
Just the most joyful moment. I was walking through Target, and for some reason, I didn't have you in a stroller or a cart or anything. I was holding you in my arms. You're about 6 months old. And you just burst into, I don't know what it was that tickled you, but you just burst into laughter. And it is that heartwarming, joyful baby laughter. And and you would pause, and I would look at you. Do it again, and we just walked down the main aisle of Target in joyful splendor. And that is one of my most favorite memories of you, that little face, your curls, and that big smile and laughter. You are a joy. You are. I'm not overstating that. I know I'm your mother, but that is not an overstatement. So, for what it's worth.
Yeah. That's not me saying yeah. It's like, hey, I am a joy. No, thank you.
No. I don't want to waste time. We have to talk.
Right. Yeah, something. I know. We've got minutes to fill. We got airspace.
Well, I feel like that was kind of we mentioned a report card. No, I'll take that as a.
Yeah, I would say that's a very important thing because, you know, I come to you with a lot of, you know, we get brunch a lot to just fill in. Mm. And that's invariably 30 minutes of that will be filled with me teaching you physics. But
yeah, an important thing that the listeners probably don't know is that we do not live together.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. We
Jimmy,
don't.
Jimmy and his brothers live with their father.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jimmy and I make a point to, well, I very much look forward to our time when we go out yeah. and get a bite to eat, which is just an excuse for talking for hours, literally yeah. hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most precious time to me. I am so grateful for the human being that you are and that I get to spend time with you. You're I'm getting a little gushy. Our conversations are so very special to me. I think you know that. You know.
Yeah, of course, because they're just as important to me. Because you know, I wouldn't, I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for you just telling me about these for making that call and introducing me to
Tyra.
Oh,
here with Tyra.
Yeah, yes. I wouldn't literally be in the studio right now without you. And something that the other thing that I think is huge about you that you've done for me and I think everyone that you know is how many people you bring to connect and how many people you bring together. And again, that's not me overstating at all because I've met so many people through you, like artists and media moguls and, you know, people from all over the world and in the way of, you know, just so many different kinds of people. And the amount of people that you, I'm just going to start repeating myself, that you bring together to get to know each other and that I hear you tell stories about all the different places that you've worked and mm-hmm. you observing maybe even times when when you worked with the rafters and everything, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember your mindset of people, you know, you were able to understand the leadership there, you know, and
Right. Challenging personalities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of circles back to what you were saying about not being afraid to explore people who are in different groups.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Explore people who have different interests. Mm-hmm. Not to be afraid. I love to meet new people. I am so excited to see what world this person is going to open up for me. Like, for example, what we're doing right here with Tyra.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I love it. I thrive on connections.
Yeah.
Like that. And I'm also very proud. I'm so happy to, I mean, I think my children are outstanding. I'm sure every mother says that. and I'm very proud to introduce you to people who also see your exceptional qualities. And, you know, it's kind of a big fluff up for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I get to be even prouder of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's lovely and validating. When that happens.
No, yeah.
Go ahead.
The more we're talking about this stuff, I keep realizing that pretty much every quality has bounced back and forth.
Yeah.
You know? And
yes.
That, because I've now come to realize how much I look forward to introducing my friends to you and to Dad and to really anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because, and I think that again kind of comes through you, because you've never been like, oh, I don't want to meet this. Like, that sounds ridiculous to both of us.
Yeah.
But then there are some, I know some people whose parents try to be as, you know, invisible as possible, you know, mm-hmm. in that way. And I'm just really glad that you've been active in meeting the people that I think are important and getting to know the people that are part of my life.
Yeah, and in well, that way. And that it's a treasure to me. When you talk about playing your board games with your friends, it's wonderful to be playing with you or
yeah.
being a fly on the wall. It's just wonderful to see those relationships you've built.
Well, since we're talking about relationships, we all in our present selves have some kind of relationship with our past self and mm-hmm. our future self. And I have asked Jimmy to do the requirement of every guest.
Of course.
And so
my assignment.
Yes, I'd like for you to read a letter now to your younger self.
All right. Well, it says, "Dear young Jimmy," and then I put in parentheses, "the one entering middle school. First and foremost, if I ever actually find a way to send you this letter, please refer immediately to the papers and equipment detailing the transportation of matter through time." Now, I'll keep this short, since I think we both know 18 years old is hardly enough experience to give long-term life advice. I don't want to change any of the choices you're about to make. I wouldn't trade any of the experiences, good or bad, that come as a result. Instead, I want to allay some of the needless fears that I know are getting to you right now. The first, that seemingly infinite shadow you've been living in, has very defined edges, and you're about to step across them into the light of your own achievements. The reason you were able to leave that place behind lies with my second point. You're about to find your second family. You will meet a host of people, younger and older, men, women, boys, and girls, that see you only for who you are, not in comparison to someone else. They will encourage you, support you, and push you to be far more than you thought you could be. They will teach you loyalty, brotherhood, and leadership, as well as how to successfully keep 28 people standing in a circle with their arms around each other, how to jump on beat, but I won't spoil that part. Finally, you should know that people, the friends who you spend hours with laughing and telling stories, the ones who leave an indelible mark on your heart, are going to be the highlight of your next 6 years.
I have a lot of thoughts. And I think, as part of clarification, one thing Jimmy said was the infinite shadow he lives under. He's talking about an older brother.
Mm-hmm.
I need to tell you that all of Sherry's children are magical, unique, and special.
Absolutely.
So I am formally thanking both of you for sharing a piece of you with me. I love each week to prepare and share a little doggy bag, a spiritual doggy bag, for that time during the week where you may wonder, am I enough? So, listen up. As we journey through our personal and professional lives, there will be inevitably periods of incredible frustration and despair. During those tough times, it will sometimes appear to us we've lost everything, and that nothing and nobody could possibly motivate us to move onward in the direction of our dreams. However, we are all wearing an emotional backpack of support. I want to tell you something that your mirror won't and can't tell you. First, you opened two gifts this morning. They were your eyes. Every day you wake up, it is God saying to you, it's not over. You are more than you have become. And know this, although each one of you came with a unique set of fingerprints, and each of you is the designer's original, created to do what no one else can do, there's some common attributes and qualities you share. When the going gets tough, when you're feeling utterly down and discouraged, you need to remember you are a miracle. You are important. You're stronger than you feel. You're stronger than depression. You're stronger than suicide. You're smarter than you think. You have multiple intelligences. you are more beautiful than you believe. Think about this. The ugly duckling was always a swan. Others tried so hard to make her be a duckling as she was growing up. She looked different. She had different skills. She began to believe it herself. She was so unhappy until one day she saw herself in all of her glory. She was a beautiful swan. You are more loved than you can ever believe. Your story hasn't been read. You have been listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device. And a reminder, we're broadcast worldwide every Saturday evening at 8 o'clock on www.radiofairfax.org. And if you're a podcast kind of person, connect with us. You can go to YouTube as well. Key and Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. My guest today has been Mr. I guess James, we're calling him Jimmy Grimes, and his mother Sherry. Your seat at the table is guaranteed. I look forward to next time. Until then, treat yourself like someone you love. I'm living intentionally and loving you. This is Tyra G.